Circe continues to warn Odysseus towards the bottom of 129. She says, "You will now come to the Thrinacian island, and here you will see many herds of cattle and flocks of sheep belonging to the sun god. 7 herds of cattle and 7 flocks of sheep, with 50 head in each flock. They do not breed, nor do they become fewer in number. And they are tended by the goddesses Phaethusa and Lampetie, who are children of the sun god Hyperion by Nereia. Their mother, when she had borne them and had done suckling them, sent them to the Thrinacian island, which was a long way off, to live there and look after their father's flocks and herds. If you leave these flocks unharmed," this is Tiresias' warning again, remember? "If you leave these flocks unharmed and think of nothing but getting home, you may yet, after much hardship, reach Ithaca. But if you harm them, then I forewarn you of the destruction, both of your ship and of your comrades. And even though you may yourself escape, you will return late, in bad plight, and losing all your men." So that's an actual recap of what Tiresias said. Same advice, no different. Here she ended, and dawn enthroned in gold began to show in heaven, whereon she returned inland. I then went on board and told my men to loose the ship from her moorings. So they at once got into her, took their places, and began to smite the gray sea with their oars. Presently, the great and cunning goddess Circe befriended us with a fair wind that blew dead aft, and stayed steadily with us, keeping our sails well filled, top of 130. So we did whatever wanted doing to the ship's gear, and let her go as wind and helmsman headed her. Then, being much troubled in mind, what does troubled in mind mean? What do you suppose that means, if his mind is troubled?
Worried.
He's worried. He's bothered by this. So maybe we're seeing some maturity. Has he ever been worried before? No, not so much. Being much troubled in mind, I said to my men, "Friends, it is not right that one or two of us alone should know the prophecies that Circe has made me. I will therefore tell you about them, so that whether we live or die, we may do so with our eyes open. First, she said we were to keep clear of the sirens, who sit and sing most beautifully in a field of flowers. But she said I might hear them myself, so long as no one else did. Therefore, take me and bind me to the crosspiece halfway up the mast. Bind me as I stand upright, with a bond so fast that I cannot possibly break away, and lash the rope's ends to the mast itself. If I beg and pray you to set me free, then bind me more tightly still." I had hardly finished telling everything to the men before we reached the island of the two sirens, for the wind had been very favorable. Then, all of a sudden, it fell dead calm. There was not a breath of wind nor a ripple upon the water. So the men furled the sails and stowed them. Then, taking to their oars, they whitened the water with the foam they raised in rowing. Meanwhile, I took a large wheel of wax and cut it up small with my sword. Then I kneaded the wax in my strong hands till it became soft, which it soon did between the kneading and the rays of the sun god, son of Hyperion. Then I stopped the ears of all my men, and they bound me, hands and feet, to the mast as I stood upright on the crosspiece. But they went on rowing themselves. When we had gotten within earshot of the land, and the ship was going at a good rate, the sirens saw that we were getting near to shore and began with their singing. All right, now you have to imagine it singing. I'm not going to sing it. But imagine that they're singing. "Come here," they sang, "renowned Odysseus, honor to the Achaean name, and listen to our two voices. No one ever sailed past us without staying to hear the enchanting sweetness of our song. And he who listens will go on his way, not only charmed, but wiser. For we know all the ills that the gods laid upon the Argives and Trojans before Troy, and can tell you everything that is going to happen over the whole world." They sang these words most musically, and as I longed to hear them further, I made signs by frowning to my men that they should set me free. But they quickened their stroke, and Eurylochus and Perimedes bound me with still stronger bonds till we had gotten out of hearing of the sirens' voices. Then my men took the wax from their ears and unbound me. Who thought it was going to work? Pat yourselves on the back. You were right. It worked. It totally worked. The earplugs kept the men from hearing, so they kept rowing. Odysseus was tied up, and he did, like, struggle to get free. But the men followed orders and tied him tighter. So it worked. So let's think about this a second. Why do you suppose this time the plan worked? What was different? Hunter.
It wasn't Odysseus' plan. It was Circe's
That's part of it. It was someone else's plan, so it was smart. What else, though? There was something else that was very different this time. Chase. He didn't change the plan at all. There's still one more thing. The only hint I know is going to give it away. Who knew about the plan this time?
Everyone.
Everyone. So is this different? Compare this to the bag of wins. Right? With the bag of wins, the men didn't know what was going on. They thought it was gold in the bag. They opened the bag. Danger, destruction, hurricane. Right back where they started. This time, the men knew about it. That's a huge plus for Odysseus, right? That's a definite thumbs up. That was a wise choice for him to make. And the reward is great. You do what you're supposed to do. You tell your men, you lead them wisely, and no one dies. So this is a good thing this time. So now, immediately after we had gotten past the island towards the bottom of 130, I saw a great wave from which spray was rising, and I heard a loud roaring sound. The men were so frightened that they loosed hold of their oars, for the whole sea resounded with the rushing of the waters. But the ship stayed where it was, for the men had left off rowing. I went round, therefore, and exhorted them man by man not to lose heart. What are they starting to hear the roaring of? Charybdis, the big whirlpool, right? She's doing her churning and sucking and vomiting thing. My friends, I said, this is not the first time we've been in danger. We are nothing like so bad a case as when the Cyclops shut us up in his cave. Nevertheless, my courage and wise counsel saved us then, and we shall live to look back on all this as well. Now, therefore, let us all do as I say. Trust in Zeus and row on with might and main. As for you, coxswain, these are your orders. Attend to them, for the ship is in your hands. Turn her head away from these steaming rapids and hug the rock, or she will give you the slip and be over yonder before you know where you are, and you will be the death of us. So they did as I told them, but I said nothing about the awful monster Scylla, for I knew the men would not go on rowing if I did, but would huddle together in the hold. In one thing only did I disobey Circe's strict instructions. I put on my armor. Then, seizing two strong spears, I took my stand on the ship's bows, for it was there that I expected first to see the monster of the rock, who was to do my men so much harm. But I could not make her out anywhere, though I strained my eyes with looking the gloomy rock over and over. So now, right after success, and telling the men, he does not tell them. Keep that in mind as we keep reading. All he tells them is, we have to stay away from that whirlpool, rapid, rushing water thing. He tells the guy who's steering the ship, don't let us anywhere near that or we're lost for sure. We have to hug this other rock. He puts on his armor because he is Odysseus, and of course he didn't listen. And he goes out front to wait for Scylla's attack. Then we entered the straits in great fear of mind. For on the one hand was Scylla, and on the other dread Charybdis kept sucking up the salt water. As she vomited it up, it was like the water in a cauldron when it's boiling over upon a great fire. And the spray reached the top of the rocks on either side. When she began to suck again, we could see the water all inside whirling round and round, and it made a deafening sound as it broke against the rocks. We could see the bottom of the whirlpool all black with sand and mud, and the men were at their wits' end with fear. While we were taken up with this and were expecting each moment to be our last, Scylla pounced down suddenly upon us and snatched up my six best men. I was looking at once after both ship and men, and in a moment I saw their hands and feet ever so high above me, struggling in the air as Scylla was carrying them off, and I heard them call out my name in one last despairing cry. As a fisherman, seated, spear in hand, upon some jutting rock, throws bait into the water to deceive the poor little fishes, and spears them with the ox's horn with which his spear is shod, throwing them gasping onto the land as he catches them one by one, even so did Scylla land these panting creatures on her rock, and munch them up at the mouth of her den, while they screamed and stretched out their hands to me in their mortal agony. This was the most sickening sight that I saw throughout all my voyages. All right, we got to pause and talk about two things. Two things are very important. First, we got to talk about the fact that he didn't tell the men. Does that kind of surprise you? I mean, he just had such success in telling them. All right, here's what I want you to imagine. This is my silly story. I want you to imagine you are Odysseus's men. Except instead of Odysseus's men, you are my sailors, Mitchell's sailors, okay? And this is hypothetical. This is pretend. Imagine that I tell you, this is not real, we're not doing this, so don't get all excited. Imagine that I tell you that I have planned a party for you in the lower gym. And I have apple juice, and I have cookies, and we're going to play with a parachute down there. Remember the parachute from grade school? Wasn't that fun? Wasn't that awesome? Okay, however, the only way to get there, we're not allowed to go outside. The only way to get to the lower gym is through the commons. And there's a monster in there, and her name is Mrs. Strike. And she has six necks. And when we sneak past the commons, she will eat six of you. If I told you that, would you think the parachute, the apple juice, and the cookies were worth possibly dying?
No.
Yep.
Wait, it's only six of you, though, right?
As long as it's not me.
So what do you think Odysseus' men would do if they knew six of them were going to die?
Hide.
Hide? What do they do all the time?
Cry.
They cry a lot, don't they? He thinks if he tells them, they would just cry. They wouldn't row, and they wouldn't have a chance of losing just the six. They would lose a lot more. So I would say to you guys, you know, cookies and apple juice and parachute are really fun, but really, how do I tell six of your parents that I let you die? And the rest of you, what would happen to the rest of you when you saw the six dying?
I'd run.
You'd probably freak out on me, right? And our ship would be destroyed, and I don't even know if you'd all show up in the lower gym. We'd be goners for sure. And you might even get close enough to, like, the history wing, and Mr. Murphy over there might, like, have this huge whirlpool in his room, and he would suck you all down into the whirlpool. It would be bad. I'm better off letting you be in the dark and just telling you, come on, let's go. We're going to the lower gym. It's going to be a big party. Now do you see why Odysseus made that choice? Kind of. Okay, one other thing. I want to talk about the fact, it's pretty gruesome, right? Scylla taking the six men, it's compared to like a fisherman. So imagine if you've been fishing and every time you catch a fish, he says with a spear. I don't know if any of you know how to spear fish. That sounds really hard to me.
It's really
Chase
fun.
Does? Okay.
It's fun.
You've done it before? Okay, well imagine that maybe you're fishing with a net. Okay, like you had a trap, and there's some fish in the net, and you take the net out of the water, and you flop the fish down on the ground. What do the fish do?
Flop.
They do this, like, convulsing thing, right? And then you kind of, like, smack them when you're ready to cook them. I'm not much of a fisher person. Can you tell? Why does Odysseus say that this was the most sickening sight he had seen? Keep in mind, he's seen some gross things. The whole Cyclops eye with the gore and the goo and the stabbing.
Six of his best
friends. The Laestrygonians chomping up his men. And
they were,
So was it because it was more horrific that they were mutilated?
Six of his best men.
And they're going, Odysseus, please help me, save us. So why is it the most sickening sight?
Because he can't do anything.
He can't anything to help him, and how does he feel?
Okay.
Tear.
How about guilty? Does he finally feel guilty?
Yes.
Do you think he's felt that guilty any other time? Not so much. So we've been waiting for these signs of maturity. I think we're starting to see them.